702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Coming up on the show today, the IEC has approached the Constitutional Court to challenge the Electoral Court's decision on Jacob Zuma. ALSA wants accountability after the NSFAS board gets dissolved. ANC promises stability in Ekurhuleni. Luke Fleur's alleged killers in court. And it's Friday, so sport and good things too. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. As you heard in the news bulletin there, the IEC confirming that it has approached the Constitutional Court around the Electoral Court's ruling on former President Jacob Zuma's exclusion. A couple of points here, and we'll get into this a bit later on with our reporter, but we still don't have the reasons from the Electoral Court for that judgment. So the IEC effectively approaching the Apex Court on this without the reasons. So that gets tricky legally. And also now there's already this concern around whether or not the IEC is acting independently. As you heard in the news bulletin, they're clearly saying we are not entering into politics. You look at Floyd Shivambu's tweet today as an example, saying it looks like the IEC is playing politics like, and it's most likely that these are influenced by the commission chairperson Mosutu and deputy chairperson Janet Love. They must focus on running free and transparent elections. Their antics are discomforting. And my colleague Juanita Hunter making the point that this isn't actually about Zuma. It's about constitutional clarity. What are your thoughts on that? Send me a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 0725-671-567. We'll get into that a bit later. But firstly, let's start with the issue of the NSFAS board and the decision by the Higher Education Minister, Bladen Zamande, to dissolve the National Student Financial Aid Scheme Board. So the board is dissolved. The SA Union of Students has welcomed the dissolution of the board, but of course there are still concerns around whether or not there is sufficient accountability. This is something that the civil rights group OUTER has been banging on about for a while. We do know that OUTER, in fact, earlier this year, when there was the resignation of the chairperson, Ernest Khoza, said that this is just not sufficient to have a resignation. We need to have some kind of accountability. Rudy Heinecker is OUTER's investigation manager and joins us now. Rudy, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. What is OUTER's reaction to the board being dissolved? Is this the way forward or is it just not sufficient?
Thank you, Mandy. Yes, we welcome the administration or NSFAS being placed under administration and the dissolvement of the board as well as the resignation of Mr. Ernest Khoza as the chairperson. We have just learned that Mr. Freeman Umvalu was appointed as the administrator and that he will take business forward at NSFAS. Him being an ex-accountant general of in the Department of Treasury, we hope that we will be able to see better business of the day at NSFAS and that students will get their allowances on time and that all the problems that the students and stakeholders experience at this stage will be eradicated very soon.
I did not know that, actually. So breaking news, thank you. Freeman Nomvalo, of course, was the CEO of Saika until the end of last year. And in all of my engagements with him, he has always emphasized how important corporate governance is and how important it is to make sure that things are run appropriately. So that does bode well. In the past, OUTER has published a report about recordings of discussions that Ernest Khoza had as well. What would you like to see happening here in terms of actual accountability?
We have handed all that information as well as later on the identification of Mr. C, who we could not identify when we released the report. We've handed that to the law enforcement agencies, to the SIU, the DPCI. We have also shared that information with the internal investigation team that the board of NSFAS appointed, TGR attorneys. So they have all the allegations, they have the recordings. It is up to them to, look at it, do a thorough investigation and come up with their findings.
And in terms of plotting the way forward for NSFAS and what needs to happen now, what is OUTER's concerns around that?
Well, Well, first of all, we will have to see, you know, the direction of the administrator, where he's taking NSFAS. But what is very important, I think, is that NSFAS, you know, a statutory obligation on them to finance students. And that's their, you know, priority. That is their mandate. That is what they must do. And we hope that that will be, you know, first on the agenda of the administrator, and that that will be going forward without any hiccups.
Rudy, thank you very much. Rudy Haneker is the Outer Investigations Manager, reacting there to that announcement yesterday from Bladen Zamande that NSFAS, the board, has been dissolved. It has been placed under administration. As you heard from Rudy there, I haven't actually seen this myself yet, but he's just told us that Freeman Nomvalo, who was the head of SAICA, the CEO of SAICA, is now in charge of NSFAS as the administrator. And what is going to happen now? So there has been reaction to this decision by the SAUS, the South African Union of Students, welcoming the long and overdue decision by Nzamande to dissolve the board. Let's speak now to Yandisa Nzoyia, who's the President General of the SA Union of Students. Yandisa, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. You welcome this decision, but is it sufficient? And you say it is long overdue.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mandy. First of all, I think we must indeed welcome the decision. It's long overdue. The board has not been doing anything. They've been passing the blame to the next person. They have not been operational. They have not been effective in dealing with decisions that have been taken by the board itself. For an example, the board had long resolved to approach the courts seeking a termination of the contracts, but that has not yet started. The board had long resolved that they must work with institutions in paying allowances to students, but that process has not been effected. So we think that the decision taken by the minister was a correct one, but we don't think it's enough because if you look at the executive management, the senior management at NSFAS, you will realize that some of the people who are heading the institution are some of the people who are tied based on the investigation. So that means even the executive management will need to be under administration itself. Because it shows that there is no CEO at the current stage, because the acting CEO is the person who was responsible for the appointment of these contracts. So there's quite a lot of work that the minister must still do in putting the institution into stability. Because as much as we believe that the only crisis at NSFAS is the fintech partners, but even accommodation has not yet been paid, and it's not being paid by fintech partners. There are other commitments that NSFAS would have been honoring, but they have not been honoring. For an example, now landlords want to evict students, and those landlords have not been paid. In Mthatha, in PE, a number of landlords are complaining not being paid, and NSFAS is not responding to them. Nothing is generally working at this stage. So we need the minister to even take further action against that.
And how does the SA Union of Students feel about the fact that it's now under administration, an administrator has been appointed? Is this the best way forward as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think this is one of the options that we had. By appointing an administrator that will effectively deal with all these issues, iron out all the problems, and put the institution into stability. I think that's the most important part, was we need to deal with the process of the court. We need to deal with the investigation. We need to deal with the employment of the CFO, of the CIO and the CEO at NSFAS. We need to deal with all those issues. So the administrator, looking at the person who is said to be appointed, it's a credible person who comes, who has led the SAICA, who's known in the industry. So I think it will be an effective administration that will put the institution into stability.
Yandisa, thank you very much. Yandisa Nzoyia is the President General of the SA Union of Students, reacting there to that decision by the Higher Education Minister, Bladen Zamande. And the point that he makes there is that this is crucial that we get this right, because there are thousands and thousands, hundreds and thousands of students that are reliant on the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. And to get those payments paid, it is things like rent, like textbooks, and getting all of those bills paid. That's why this is so urgent and so crucial.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
As I mentioned at the start of the show, the IEC, the Electoral Commission of South Africa, has confirmed that it has now approached the Constitutional Court regarding the Electoral Court's ruling on former President Jacob Zuma. So the IEC lodging an urgent direct appeal to the Concord, wanting to challenge the Electoral Court order on its decision to bar the Umkhonto Sizwe party leader, Jacob Zuma, from participating in the elections. Remember, all the fuss has been around the fact that the Electoral Court has now said that Zuma is eligible. He can be a member of parliament. The IEC wants clarity on this. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter, joining us now to speak about this. To be clear, we don't have the reasons yet from the Electoral Court for that judgment. So how does the IEC go to the Concord if we don't have the reasons?
Yeah, I think that's the question here, Mandy. You know, everyone's really questioning what the basis of this appeal will be. And I think that the IEC was also aware that that would be the main question. And that's why even in their own court papers, they addressed this, saying they have asked for those reasons, but they need to move on this because for them, they believe that this is a matter of national importance. They say it's in the public interest and it's important for them to go ahead with this. But I think, you know, in terms of the judgment, and we had this conversation earlier on in the week, Mandy, where that ruling, whichever way you look at it, really speaks to Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution. And the Electoral Court coming out to say that the former president is eligible to be an MP, whichever way you look at it, really speaks to the fact that they're saying Section 47(1)(e) does not apply to him, you know, he can continue. And so that's what the IEC is going with it. The IEC, that's what they're going with here. Even in their papers, they speak to how they cover the entire genesis of this, speaking about how the former president was found guilty to being in contempt of court, how he was sentenced to 15 months. They give an elaborate background on all of this. And for them too, it's clear from their court papers that their understanding is that the Electoral Court believes Section 47(1)(e) does not apply to the former president.
This isn't necessarily just about Zuma. It's about constitutional precedent and getting clarity for the IEC. But we know that already there are accusations that there is interference and that the IEC and the commissioners are biased in some way or another. I read a tweet from Floyd Shivambu saying that it's clear that the IEC is being played here. The IEC says it doesn't want to get involved in politics. How does this play out then?
You know, former President Jacob Zuma has himself declared that the IEC is getting involved in politics. You know, he has said it on every platform that he's occupied, that the IEC has no business dealing, you know, with these issues. He says what should happen here is that the IEC is a body that just makes sure that, you know, voting happens, they count the votes and they announce the results. And so he's already feeding this perception that the IEC is entering the political ring. And I think that's why the IEC itself has also come out with the statement where they speak about how they want to emphasize that this appeal is not intended to involve itself in the political field of play. It's rather to ensure free and fair elections by ensuring that applicable constitution provisions relating to the elections are clearly understood. And so they are also aware of the perception out there.
Sure. And it's dangerous, dangerous territory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dangerous territory because, you know, the question that's lingering now is, if this isn't political, why would you want to rush to appeal this without any reasons? What are you appealing? And I think we're all waiting to hear from the IEC as they approach the Constitutional Court. I think it's interesting also, Mandy, that they're approaching the Constitutional Court, which is the court that sentenced the former president to 15 months in prison. Yeah. So which better place to go? I think the court will be in the best position to actually state and stipulate whether this 15-month sentence can be expunged by a presidential remission.
Khumotso, thank you very much. So I made the point in my column this week around the fact that if Jacob Zuma can be a member of parliament, then the system is broken. And what I mean by that is that our constitution is, we have the most amazing constitution in the world, but it's also a living document, which means it can be altered. And it gets altered through decisions of the legislature, so that's laws, but also through the Constitutional Court. And now we're seeing a challenge to the Constitutional Court, and perhaps the criteria required for a Member of Parliament, which is very clear in our Constitution at this point, but was written 30 years ago, perhaps is no longer appropriate. And for Jacob Zuma to only be barred from being a Member of Parliament because of a criminal record, perhaps the bar should be higher than that. Perhaps there should be an ethical and moral bar as well. But even on the basis of the law as it stands, he was sentenced to prison for 15 months, and that was within the last 5 years. And I think that's why people are so confused, because that's what the law says. So the fact that we haven't got reasons in this judgment is confusing a lot of people, but the IEC now confirming that it is going to the Constitutional Court to challenge that Electoral Court decision.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hey, good day, Mandy. Auburn First Loss. Mandy, the issue of Jacob Zuma, the IEC going to the highest court in the land, it is not targeting Zuma. You know, Mandy, what's happening like here in the election, like in First Loss. The more you are popular or you are notorious, people tend to like you. So Aubrey can start stealing cars and robbing people, then get arrested, sentenced for 3 years. When I come, Mandy, because I'm known now in the election, I'm going to run for mayor or for something like that or political party. Because I'm popular, as I'm saying, some to them, it entice them. They are going to vote for me. So the country will end up being led by criminals, or criminals will end up being the one who are lawmakers. Thank you.
Hi, Mandy. I'm not coming from a factual sort of point of view here. I'm just actually purely emotional at the moment. Just hearing that Zuma's running for office, it just outrages me that someone who so clearly was involved in the state capture with the Guptas can be running for office. It just outrages me. It really upsets me and depresses me. Thank you, Deborah Durbanville.
Thank you for both of those WhatsApp voice notes. And I think that we do have this tendency in South Africa to, when you have name familiarity, then you are popular and then people tend to vote with you. I think that obviously there needs to be better education, political, civic education, and the importance of what we require. But as I made the point earlier, the bar should be much higher for our politicians. It shouldn't be based exclusively on whether they have a criminal record. I think that we should have higher expectations, morally and ethically. And when you look at the track record and the legacy of Jacob Zuma and all of the various controversies that he has been involved in, but more than that, the fact that he oversaw the period of state capture in this country, the evisceration of state-owned entities, the looting of the state, all of the destruction of our infrastructure, it does baffle the mind that he should be eligible to be a Member of Parliament.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
In court today, six suspects linked to the murder of Kaizer Chiefs defender Luke Fleurs appearing in court in the west of Joburg today. Fleurs fatally shot in a hijacking incident in Joburg last week. Let's find out more about this with Linda Mnisi, Newsroom Africa reporter, who's joining us. Linda, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for making time to speak to us today. Tell us about this court appearance today.
Good afternoon, Mandy. So, as you know, this was their first court appearance, and it was brief, basically them being informed of their rights and the kind of charges that they're facing. This, of course, is the first time that many of us are introduced to them, including Fleurs' family, who broke down when the men entered the dock this morning. You know, one of the interesting things is that one of the youngest accused persons in this matter is just 21 years old, and the eldest being 36 years old. They're all facing charges, Mandy, of murder, robbery with aggravating circumstances, unlicensed possession of, or unlawful rather, possession of firearm and ammunition, as well as defeating the ends of justice. So they appeared today without any legal representation, and they've told the court that they want to use the services of legal aid. Interestingly, they also say that they want to apply for bail, possibly in the next court appearance.
The police have been telling us that they are believed to be part of a hijacking syndicate. There were some reports suggesting otherwise. Is the state still clear on that?
Well, the state has not let out much, really, at this point in terms of any other details relating to this particular matter. They're telling us that investigations are still underway, and it will be much clearer at bail stage in terms of what exactly it is that you know, they believe happened in this particular case, and the charges so far, what they can confirm is that they will be opposing the bail application that will be brought by the accused persons. In any case, it is a Schedule 6 offence, which then means that the onus is on the accused persons to you know, discharge exceptional circumstances that permit their release on bail. So second to that hurdle that they would have to jump is the state opposing this bail application. They say that the hijacking charge is intertwined with a robbery with aggravating circumstances, not really wanting to get into detail around the circumstances or rather the merits of this case. They believe that they have a watertight case and they will at a later stage get a conviction.
Linda, thank you very much. Linda Mnisi, Newsroom Africa reporter, telling us about that court appearance today. Six men linked to the murder of the Kaizer Chiefs defender, Luke Fleurs.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Good day, Mandy. Good day to you and your team. Let's run all here. Mandy, it's you know, it's disgusting. It's really disgusting for the IEC to be used by the ANC, and comes out in public like this. Because this is the ANC. It's the ANC using the IEC, and the IEC, they're independent. They're independent. Why would they have to run to the Constitutional Court for what? Ay, man. Then we're gonna say these elections are free and fair. When the IEC is being used by the ruling party to fight its wars.
Hi, Mandy. I have to say that I am absolutely flummoxed that the Electoral Court can issue a judgment that is so important to the rest of the nation, which the rest of the nation waited for with bated breath, to issue its findings without at the same time or close to the time of the release also giving the reasons. All you have is speculation and people asking questions about whether it is now that the reasons are being put together. This is really irresponsible and detrimental to our democracy. Cheers, King here.
Thank you very much for that. Look, on the decision of the Electoral Court, there was an urgency issue around time. They had a deadline, and I think that's why they haven't given reasons. But I agree with you that they shouldn't be delaying. They need to give us reasons. On this idea of the IEC being biased or being used by the ANC, I think it's really dangerous territory. And I think we have to be very, very careful about that, because the IEC has given us no reason to think that it is biased in any way. It has consistently run free and fair elections in South Africa. It is internationally regarded. And I think what we are going to see over the next 6 weeks is a very consistent attack on the credibility of the IEC, as we've been seeing from Zuma on this. And I think it's important, and we have to be responsible as the media, to also point out that this constitutional court bid now by the IEC is not just about Zuma. It's about getting constitutional clarity on the powers of the IEC and what the IEC is able to do and on setting precedent. And I think it's important for us to remember that as well.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
I'm happy that I want to remain anonymous. I'm happy that Jacob Zuma has won the case. Then he must run the elections. Let's see who's going to vote for him. Because of at least he won't feel disadvantaged or hard done by constitution or by our courts. So it's fine. Let's see how many people are going to vote for him. Then we'll take it from there. And by the way, with all these things, it has given me so much energy to go and then vote for ANC of Ramaphosa. So I'm voting for ANC of Ramaphosa because of I would rather deal with the ANC than to deal with the man who once had unprotected sex and then had a shower afterwards. Yeah. It's so irritating. Eh?
Good day, Mandy. I think the IEC is jumping the gun. If people don't want Zuma in parliament, then don't vote for MK. Don't vote for it. If you don't like the Zuma in the just leave it. There are a lot of political parties there. That's what democracy is about. Jabulani Noetville. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those WhatsApp voice notes. Look, lots of different reactions to this decision by the IEC to appeal to the Constitutional Court. Some people saying that they should have waited a period of time after the elections and then done it. And I think the point here, and I've been making this point, and some of you do not like it, is the fact that this is an important point of constitutional clarity on whether the IEC's role is to enforce Section 47 of the Constitution or not. And an excellent thread I've just shared on Twitter by my colleague Juanita Hunter, in which she explains that the MK party has argued that it is not the IEC's role to enforce Section 47, meaning the IEC doesn't have the power to vet candidates before they contest elections. But that means that if only the National Assembly can enforce that section of the Constitution, then a bunch of unqualified people can contest and be voted and then get disqualified when seats are actually allocated. So what happens to those votes? So we need clarity on what the powers of the IEC are. This is not just about Zuma. It's about what the role of the IEC is going into an election.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday.
12 to 1 p.m.
Well, let's look at the situation in Ekurhuleni now, because yesterday the ANC's Dr. Qakaza was elected unopposed at an extraordinary council sitting in Ekurhuleni. Of course, there was lots of consternation around whether that council would have to be dissolved, whether it would be placed under administration because there was no mayor. So now the ANC candidate coming in and the ANC saying that it wants to bring stability to Ekurhuleni. Let's speak to the ANC's Gauteng Secretary, Tika Ngiza, now. Tika, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Is the ANC satisfied with the election of its mayor? Unopposed, no other candidates? You obviously were able to repair that that coalition there.
Let me say good day to you and your listeners, and thank you for inviting us to be part of your show. Of course, the African National Congress is satisfied with the election of Comrade Dr. Qakaza, who is one of the most experienced councillors in that council, who was once an MMC of Finance, gave us clean audits, he was also an MMC of Economic Development. So it brings a lot of experience, and I believe that the residents of Ekurhuleni, alongside the investors and many other people in Gauteng, will be satisfied, because you need a stable Ekurhuleni as Gauteng. We really need a stable Ekurhuleni. But we also need a person with experience to really take out that Ekurhuleni where it is. And I think I want to applaud many political parties who are part of that process, because to really, at this time, going into the elections, and allow a party to come in, which is not necessarily having an absolute majority, but recognizing the fact that the African National Congress has got many wards. In fact, 70% of wards in Ekurhuleni are under the African National Congress. So we really want to applaud everybody.
Right.
Because to be not opposed means confidence. So political parties do have confidence in the leadership of the ANC, because they know the experience that it has and what it can do to turn the situation around in Ekurhuleni.
So how now do you bring stability to Ekurhuleni? We do know that there was a real rift between the ANC and the EFF in this coalition. The EFF decided to support your candidate yesterday. Of course, we're now waiting to see what the ministerial committee will look like, and I imagine there would have to be some concessions made there. So how do you keep everyone happy in Ekurhuleni and keep stability there?
The first thing is you need an inclusive leadership, because once you don't get a mandate from the citizens or of Ekurhuleni or any other coalition, you then have to come together and say, okay, how do we take our citizens forward? Because no one has got absolute majority. What you call arrogance, it does not work when it comes to a coalition. It just doesn't work. But also there must be a sense that the ANC does have the majority of at least councillors in that council. And if it's given that responsibility to then respond to the issues of our people, it should. So we are expecting Comrade Doctor to announce his executive, and we expect him to put an inclusive leadership that must be able to take Ekurhuleni forward and bring stability at least up until we go to the next local government election.
TK Ngcwiza, Gauteng's ANC secretary, speaking to us there about those developments in Ekurhuleni, where we have a new mayor, and we're waiting for that ministerial committee as well. And it will be an interesting demonstration of whether the so-called doomsday coalition, as the DA describes it, between the ANC and the EFF can work out. We know there have been rifts between the parties in Ekurhuleni, but the EFF yesterday supporting the ANC candidate.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hi, Mandy. I'm amazed that the Constitutional Court itself is mum on this issue. Shouldn't they be proactive instead of just sitting and waiting for the country to go into a constitutional dilemma? Can't they just come out and just explain what remission means and then we move on?
Good afternoon, Mandy. This is Tembi. I understood the first time that the IEC said, we don't want this guy on the ballot. But now to go ahead and appeal that court decision. Yeah, now I understand why the DA had applied to the US for the observation of the upcoming elections and more observers, because it doesn't sound right. But anyway, who am I? Thank you, Mandy. Bye.
Afternoon, Mandy. There's no playing politics here. I'm very glad that the IEC has decided to approach the Concord to seek clarity on this situation involving ex-convicts in Jacob Zuma's situation. Because right now there's a lot of confusion and we need clarity so that it sets a good legal precedence. Because right now there's a lot of confusion as far as this is concerned. Thanks, Farai.
Afternoon, Mandy. Just like Terry Zelani said, I find it very interesting that the IEC can be so hell-bent just because of one person. Taking this matter to the highest court in the land, especially because of they are focusing only on one subsection, if I can call it that way, not the entire section of the law. They are just talking about, I think it's section E of the law. Now the question is, are we still going to say IEC is independent? Because perception is everything. I don't think we're now going to perceive IEC as independent.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 7:02.
Let's walk the talk.
12:48 on the Midday Report. So let's start winding down on a Friday. And we always end off the show with sports and good things. But I want to bring you something a little bit different first from all of the politics and heaviness that we've been talking about. So I have to make an admission to our Cape Town listeners. And that is, I've never surfed, right? Like, it's just, I don't think I'm able to. I haven't really tried. But I have always been a big fan of reading Zigzag magazine, which is like really captures the South African surfing culture. It's been going since 1976. So those of you who read it will absolutely know about it. And a lot of people were devastated when it came to an end at the end of last year. So the final print edition came out in December last year. And now there's news that Zigzag is going to be revived. So it's coming back. And we're going to find out how that's happening and what that means with Jazz Kushka, who's the Zigzag editor. Jazz, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. So a European media and marketing conglomerate has stepped in, Rebel Media Group, to save Zigzag. Tell us about this and what's going to be happening now.
Mandy, first of all, thanks a lot for having us on. Yes, indeed. I mean, it's, as you mentioned, some good things on a Friday afternoon. It's obviously great news for us as a surf industry in South Africa and for surfers both in South Africa, Africa, and hopefully Europe. Yes, so Christian Hurl, who heads up Rebel Media in Germany, is based in Germany. He's got various titles there, and he's taken over the ownership of the title and will be publishing as is, as we have in the past. So exciting times ahead.
So for the community that's always followed Zigzag, what can they expect from the future? Are you going to be coming out with a print edition? Is it going to be more digital? What is the plan going forward?
So the plan is a bit of a hybrid approach, as is obviously the media landscape at the moment. Quite a robust digital property with daily, weekly, monthly updates in various sort of incarnations, both on our social channels and through the digital channels on the website and that sort of thing. And then the plan is to do two bumper print editions per year, so a winter edition and a summer edition. And I hate the term, you know, coffee table magazine, but the plan is for an annual of sorts for each of those to really sort of stand alone and be more than just a magazine that you consume once and you kind of put it down. So really kind of a keepsake, beautiful images, as is, you know, we've got the best surf photographers in the world in South Africa and some of the best writers. So we will hunt up the best talent, unearth some new talent and be knocking on the doors of many of our old contributors to be producing the best content, both in print and digitally.
I love this quote from your former owner and publisher, Andy Davis, in which he says that no one really owns Zigzag. We're all just custodians. And it really is about the kind of surf culture in South Africa and the community. Why is having Zigzag important for that community and that culture?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, no, definitely nobody owns it. And Zigzag is bigger than anybody or the sum of its parts. For the community, it's firstly, obviously, and then as you mentioned, you know, it's nice to read. I mean, it's a good thing to have a media title in any kind of niche. You know, the cycling industry wouldn't be what it is without the likes of bicycling. The same with running. You know, runner's world. You need those titles for the community to both see the new talent coming up, so the Groms, as we call them, the young surfers who are potentially the next Geordie Smiths of the world. But then all the way to the older surfers who are paddling out single fin longboards at Ulitz Reef in St. Francis. You know, we want to be something for everybody to read. And without that, also the industry, you know, like, will suffer. You know, the brands need somewhere to advertise, somewhere to show off their newest product. So it's both important for the marketing side of things as well as for the readership.
Jazz, thank you so much. Jazz Kushka is the editor of Zigzag magazine. If you were worried that it had disappeared off your shelves at the end of last year, it is coming back.
Hi, Mandy. After last night game, I'm walking alone. But not for long, because by Monday, I'm not walking alone anymore. Liverpool will bounce back, win this weekend, and win... beat Atalanta 4-3, 4-0 to go through on Eredivisie.
Sports Wrap. Sports Wrap with Tholakele Mganga.
Oh, Liverpool fans, hey? 3-0. I woke my son up this morning and I said, did you see the score? 3-0, you lost.
You know what's funny? I remember listening to Jurgen Klopp after the draw on Sunday. He was like, you know, Manchester United, they only raised their game for us and Arsenal are just going to beat them. I was like, focus on yourself. And yesterday was proof about why everybody needs to just focus on themselves.
It's all just falling apart spectacularly for Jurgen's Liverpool at the moment.
A friend of mine who's a huge Liverpool supporter is like, we're just going to end up with the Carabao Cup. After all of this and all the hype, we're just going to end up with that trophy.
So what are we expecting this weekend? Football?
We've got a lot of football on the go. Locally, we've got the Nedbank Cup, which takes center stage. Of course, we know that the games kick off this Friday. That's between Amadax and Mamelodi Sundowns. The big encounters include Orlando Pirates up against AmaZulu. We've got Stellies, who are, dare I say, the Cup Kings at the moment, because of course we know that they won the Carling Black Label Cup in December. Then on Sunday, we've got TS Galaxy in action against Chippa United. Then we've also got some Premier League action. Of course, Liverpool, out of the three teams that are chasing the titles, they will be the one most desperate for a victory. Following last week's results, we've got Manchester City taking on a Luton Town who are fighting relegation. We've got Arsenal up against Aston Villa. A month ago, you would have said Aston Villa are possible title contenders, but Unai Emery's side have really disappointed towards the latter stages of the campaign. So that game is on Sunday, and then Liverpool will be taking on Crystal Palace. And for your Tottenham Hotspur, they are in action. Let me see. But also, you guys are chasing the top four, so it doesn't really matter what you guys do. I'm sorry, Mandy. At least you have something to play for.
Masters currently underway.
Yes.
Who's your money on?
Honestly, it's John Rahm.
Not again. You won't win 2 years in a row.
But you never know. I think the way Liv has changed things, where there are players that have more space to rest and can just focus on the big tournaments. I think that's a great thing for me. But also you look at the fact that weather, Sergio Garcia pointed it out, that because of the weather on day one and then going to the rest of the weekend, those are also going to be issues that actually disrupt the golfers.
I'm just putting it out there. I think Matt Fitzpatrick is going to win.
That is such a wild card.
It's so wild card. But let's just see. And then we can play this back on Monday when he's won.
And then both of us get it wrong. It'll be so funny. But I think the one person that will just be hoping to get through the day is Tiger Woods. We know that he, even just walking for him right now, he's just grateful to get through that. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this Friday. But we know that coming into today's action, Bryson DeChambeau leads by one from Scottie Scheffler.
Tolokele, thank you so much. Lots of golf to get behind this weekend.
Good things. With Brent Lindeke.
Well, let's wrap up as always on a Friday with Brett Lindeke, the good things guy. Hey, Brenty, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, man, and happy Friday to all of the 702 and Cape Talk listeners.
Gosh, I said Friday instead of Friday. I hope no one noticed.
It's Friday.
Sorry. Brent, an anonymous person has shared an inspiring tip for helping delivery drivers after they gave their driver a loaf of bread. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this anonymous user went to a Facebook group. It's called The Village. It's actually, The Village is such a great place to go get information or to ask questions.
Yeah, The Village is awesome. I'm a member. Vanessa Raffaele, you're doing cool things. So we're fans.
Yeah, just so rad. And an anonymous member took to the Facebook group to speak about a story. So they had, obviously, in this day and age, we get deliveries. We get our Checker 6060. We get whatever coming out to deliver to our houses. And she got a delivery. The delivery driver arrived at her house, and she'd actually bought him or her an extra loaf of bread and milk and said to the driver, "This is for you." And the driver started crying and said, "I haven't eaten in 3 days because I'm spending all of my money on petrol." And we all know how expensive petrol can be. So this anonymous member sort of just said, if you can afford it and you are buying deliveries, please just add a little bit extra on for these delivery drivers to help them. They don't get paid that much. And it will certainly be a random act of kindness that will make their day. And let me tell you, it's become a movement where people are doing this. Some even mentioned that some restaurants are giving these drivers sandwiches when they come and collect. So the Ubuntu is alive and well in South Africa. And it's things like that that warm our heart and remind us that the smallest things that can be the biggest things to other people.
What a great South African story. A Wits graduate's father has the best reaction to him finishing university. What's this about?
If you have not seen this video, it will give you all the feels and make you cry. Sibonelo is one of 7 kids that was born in rural KwaZulu-Natal from this family, and he's the first person in his family to graduate from university. He went to Wits to do a degree in psychology, but he found a passion for film along the way, and he made the switch. When he completed his studies, he continued to get his psychology degree too as an elective. And the Instagram video that's been going viral is just of his dad absolutely in awe and celebrating his son, who has not only made his family proud, but will go on to do great things. And I just think graduation season is just such a thing to celebrate as well, all of these students that are going to go on and hopefully do great things for
and giving us all of the feels. We know you love an animal story, Brent. Pregnant pangolin saved from poachers in the Northwest?
Oh, yes, I do love animal stories, and this one's so important. So the pangolins are the most trafficked mammal in the world, and they are on the level of extinction. But this pangolin was saved, and it was taken to the secret location that the Johannesburg Wildlife Vet Hospital have. They don't let anybody know where those pangolins go to keep them safe. And on arrival, they called this pangolin Spicy, because she was quite spicy, and they did a little checkup on her, and they found out that she was, in fact, pregnant. So that's not just one pangolin that got saved. It will be two as well when that pup is born, which they believe will be all in good shape after they were saved from the poachers. She has already been released to a very secret location where she's being protected. And there will be follow-up for that story when she is born, the little pup.
Oh, Brent, thank you so much. Thanks for bringing us all of those fantastic good news stories.
Every Friday, only on 702 in Cape Talk. And like I say every Friday, wishing you only good things.
Only good things. That's Brent Lindeke, the good things guy, wrapping up our Friday.